Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. I have the great honor of talking with Jack Clark Robinson, Father Jack Clark Robinson, the director of the Mission of Library. And we want to talk about our beautiful, beautiful archive library. And you might be saying, okay, what is she talking about? So a lot of people don't know this, and they've lived in Santa Barbara for quite a while. But on top of the mission, kind of on top of the mission, there is a library. It's the archive, Santa Barbara Mission Archive Library. And that library has incredible collections. I mean, ranging from very, very early materials and very early books to some private archives as well. And what got me interested in talking with Father Jack was that Father Joe Thompson had donated a number of his materials to the archive library, notably some materials related to his descendants, which were the De La Guerra family. And I've been fascinated with the De La Guerra family for years. And I thought, oh, this is a good opportunity to talk about what's in the library and why it's so special. In amongst, I will tell you this, dear listener, in amongst all of the missions, and there's 21, this is the queen of the missions because of the library. And it is where everybody that's connected with any of the missions ends up. It's the repository for all the other missions. And I bet you didn't know that right here in Santa Barbara, we have this amazing collection. And to talk about it is Father Jack today. And Father Jack, I wonder if you'd start off, of course, before we started the recording where all great things are said, Father Jack was showing us a very special book that was recently donated by Father Joe Thompson. And I wonder if we could start with that. Father Jack, if you introduce us to the library a little bit through that book.
Okay. Through this book. This is, it's not so recently donated. It okay. came to the library when Father Joe died in 1967.
Oh, so, I didn't know. So I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, it came. But the story behind it, and this is actually says a whole lot about Franciscans and the way things sort of end up coming into places like the Mission Archive Library. Franciscans are accidental collectors. We don't usually set out to collect things, but people share with us, give us things. And in this case, the De La Guerra family, starting with Captain De La Guerra, starting with, you know, back at the Presidio a couple of hundred years ago. Anyway, they started as a family. They would keep letters. They would keep documents. They would keep these things. And somewhere along the line, Father Joe came to the Franciscans. I mean, he was Joseph Thompson. His mother was a direct De La Guerra descendant. And so came through the family. He was connected. And so when they saw his interest, and his interest resulted in him writing this book about El Gran Capitan, about Jose De La Guerra. And when that interest, the material more and more came to him, and then with the provision, and actually the family wanted the material to be kept safe, to be kept, you know, and so on, and preserved. And so he received the material, with the whole idea of it would be passed on to the friars. It would be passed on to the archive library when he died, which is what happened in 1967. And so it's one of many collections that we have that have come to us inadvertently, accidentally. But the archive library, the Mission Archive Library, to go back, to step back just a little bit, you mentioned the 21 missions here in California, Alta California, starting in 1769 with San Diego and, you know, going all the way through the founding of the 21. Well, at one point in history, in the 1830s, the Mexican government, because Mexico had become independent in 1821, in the 1830s, the Mexican government started leasing and then eventually selling the land that had been connected to these 21 missions. And in all of the missions, there had been agricultural land, there had been ranch land, there had been land that supported the Indians. The Indians worked on and they were supported by it. And the conception, or the way they thought about it in Spanish law, is that all of this land belonged to the king. And the Native Americans, as subjects of the king, they had the use of it. They had they received the produce. They received what was grown on it. And so when that happened, when Mexico achieved its independence and the government was in need of money, they decided that instead of all of this being, you know, kept in that way, in that regard, that they would start leasing the land, the agricultural land, to those who would pay the government money instead of, you know, spreading it out, so to speak. So with that, the Franciscans were gradually pushed out of 20 of the 21 missions. Only Mission Santa Barbara, because Daniel Hill and Nicholas Dinn, the two men who leased the property here in Santa Barbara, wanted the friars to stay. They were actually Irish, and so this gets to be in by the time this is happening, you know, there are immigrants from other places besides Spain, besides Mexico, besides the natives who had been here for thousands of years. There are other people here in California, and so Dinn and Hill lease this land from the government, but say, Franciscans, we want you to stay, and so they did. Well, when the friars were pushed out of the other missions, they wanted to preserve the books that they had, because each and every one of them had a little library. I mean, they had a terrible time getting the internet to work in the 1700s.
1833.
A terrible time getting the internet to work. So they had to bring books with them. They had to bring the references for agriculture, for architecture, for building, for, you know, besides theology, you know, besides the theology that they had and wanted to put into practice. So they had libraries, and they brought much of those libraries, as well as the records that they kept. They brought a lot of the records here to Santa Barbara, where there were still Franciscans. So especially starting in 1842, Jose Maria de Jesus Gonzalez Rubio was a friar here from 1842 until 1872 when he died. And most of that time, he was the head of the house. So he made sure that those things that were brought from other missions did not get lost. So he's the spiritual great grandfather of the archive library. And so he made sure they didn't get lost. And one of the things that people can see is we have a beautiful portrait of him painted in 1850 that was commissioned by the people of Santa Barbara. and they raised money. It was a very early GoFundMe kind of thing. Families gave $1 or $2 or $3, and they raised $391.27 to get this portrait painted, which was a whole lot of money in 1850 when the painting was done. And so we have it. It's one of our treasures in the archive library. And so they were keeping these things and keeping these things. And then along about 1900, a friar named Zephron Engelhart came to the old mission. Now, he was born in Germany, was an immigrant, and so on. And many of the friars between 1885 and 1915 were German immigrants, actually. So he came, he was here, and he started collecting even more. He was a historian. He wrote history. So he was a historian, and he went to other archives and to other libraries, and he did what you had to do in those days. He did handwritten notes or copies of things because Xerox wasn't around yet. So they had to do, they had to do things like that. And he did that. And one of the places that he did that was in a museum and an archive in San Francisco that he did. Thank goodness he did it before 1906.
Because oh, yes.
In 1906, the fire, the earthquake and the fire in San Francisco, much of what that Zephron Engelhart copied, that's the only remnant of a lot of that material. So he was writing the history of the missions. He was exploring the history of the Franciscans in California. And so he copied all that. Another thing that we have is that in the Spanish times, every mission had to write a report every year about how many people are at the mission, how many baptisms did you have this year, how many weddings, how many funerals, how much is being grown there, how many head of cattle do you have? How many chickens do you have? All this, they had to record all this. The government wanted to know. And so they wrote these reports. They kept one report at the mission. One report went to Mexico City, and another copy of it went to Spain itself. So we have many, many, many of these preguntas. That is the questions that were asked of the missions. That's, again, part of the documentation we have. And these would be what you would call primary source materials. So we have something in the neighborhood of 10,000 documents, which is what makes this one of the most significant repositories for the history of the California missions and of the Franciscans in California and their interactions with other people, with the Native Americans, with the government. They didn't always get along with the government and with others who came along later. So that's just an overview.
The preguntas, what's the date you started? What's the earliest pregunta and what's the last pregunta?
1769. And then.
Right. So that's the first from Mission San Diego. Yep. Okay.
And then going through 1821 when Mexico got its independence.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to ask you four questions.
Okay.
That relate to the archive. And your personal opinions on each of these categories, I guess you could say. So if you had to say, okay, Elizabeth, I'm going to tell you my favorite or the most, well, my favorite could be different from the most impactful work that you have in the archive that deals with first topic, agriculture. Second topic, I bet you I know what you're going to say about this one, architecture. third topic, theology, and fourth topic, record of former Franciscans, former friars. Those four topics, if I had to say, Father Jack, what's your top pick of all of the works that you have regarding architecture? What would that be? What would it be about agriculture? What would your top pick be as far as the archives theology? And your top pick would be for record of former Franciscan friars. So can we start with agriculture?
Agriculture. All right. One of the things that we have that is in the archive library is from the libraries. From the libraries, we have significant books on horticulture and significant books on animal husbandry. We have works on those, as well as works on medicine too, which would prove important in that regard. But probably the single most significant to get a grasp of, to get a history of agriculture in those very early days in California, when things were being transformed from a hunter-gatherer culture as the Chumash had, to a culture and a society that was agricultural, would be those records of what was grown, where, and when. You have it year by year. How much was being grown here? How large was the herd? How many pigs? How many sheep? How many horses? How many cattle? You know, and you've got that mission by mission, year by year. And so it's just a marvelous overview of how agriculture developed in California. And we've also got some records of some other interesting things. Besides the gardens, they had orchards. So they planted the trees. I mean, they planted the trees. They grew the peaches. They grew the oranges. They grew, you know, those things. And they planted vineyards. So it was probably 1780 before there was a vineyard. But they planted vineyards because life is better with wine, and especially the celebration of the sacraments. The Catholic celebration of the Eucharist requires wine. And so rather than to have it all shipped in, because it was all coming by ship in large, big jars that, you know, sealed jars. That's how in the first, maybe the first 10 to 15 years, that's how most of the wine that they used. And obviously they kept most of that wine was for sacramental use, because it was a very expensive commodity to ship. It wasn't something that you had every night with dinner. Although later on, after those vineyards got going, they discovered how wonderful it would be to have a little glass of wine with dinner. We have a marvelous little tiny book from the 1830s on, this was published in Mexico, but it was how to prepare liqueurs and drinks according to the French fashion. So you took the wine, you took lemon, you took other things, and you made some fancy drinks too. We got a little, it's a little thin book, but it's how to do it, because life was good.
So you've got the vineyards beginning as testimony by that one particular Pregunta, the vineyard is being 1780. Are you talking about here in
1780s? I don't remember the exact year in the 1780s, but it's approximately the 1780s when vineyards had started to produce so that they could produce wine.
And is that mission-wide or is that specific to
No, it was, it's, it, well, San Diego was first. And then I think, I'm not sure if it was San Antonio, which was the third mission founded, or maybe it may have been at Carmel too, which was the second one.
So we start, and then we go into the second quarter of the 19th century, where who knew that the Franciscans were delectizing over the first real cocktail book, which was the the How to Prepare Liqueurs in the French Tradition. I didn't know. That's fantastic. Architecture, your pick.
My pick would obviously be Vitruvius. Have you seen?
I have. I've seen it. Vitruvius. Yes.
We have. Yes. It's a 17. I think it's 1787 edition of a large book. I mean, this book is like 18 inches by 2 feet, or close to that, book with many, many prints in it. Wood, metal cut prints or wood cut prints. And they illustrate the Roman architect Vitruvius, who wrote in the imperial era, I mean, the time of Caesar Augustus and so on. He was designing Roman things as an engineer, as an architect. He's very famous. What everybody knows is the, quote, Vitruvian man, which is the guy who's got his arms and legs extended so he can form either a square or a circle. I mean, that's that the human proportions will do that. But he designed temples. And if you look at the facade of Mission Santa Barbara, if you take away the bell towers, the facade is a temple he designed for a virgin goddess, a Roman virgin goddess. And since they were building a church for a virgin and martyr, for a virgin martyr, they decided this would be a good edifice to have in the front, but they wanted to turn it into a Christian church instead of a Roman temple. So what did they do? They added two bell towers. It's the bell towers that turned it into a church instead of a temple.
For some reason, I remember seeing the Vitruvius and thinking what a contribution that must have made to Palladian architecture, and then thinking about what was it about where I worship that was Palladian, and is there a connection, or am I just wrong?
I really couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Okay.
That's outside my area.
Okay. Okay.
But so, the other thing that comes with Vitruvius, see this, even though Mission Santa Barbara was founded in 1786, the current edifice, the current building we have, wasn't built until the 1820s. The first one was simply too small, and then the next two earthquakes. And so this is the fourth edifice here. And so they had that book. But also all along in other places, the whole Roman design with the red clay tile roof and arches and all of that. So Vitruvius and the Roman influence was enormous all around the missions, or in many of the missions in California. So that's why that particular work is, as you say, that would be the outstanding architectural work in our collection. Though we also have drawings and designs for waterworks. I mean, this is something that folks don't realize is how extensive in some places the waterworks were. For instance, here at Mission Santa Barbara, there is this natural spring that's a half a mile away from the mission, up Mission Canyon a little bit. That spring fed the water system for the mission. And it fed it through a filter house. There was a reservoir and then a filter house that had rocks, had charcoal, had everything. And so everything entered the top of the filter house, filtered down through. The water comes out clean, and it went into a pipe system that ran down to the fountain in front of the mission, where it was used by everybody in the village, everybody in the Chumash village that grew up here around the mission. And so that, and in very recent times, in the last few months, when they were doing the work that needed to be done for the new ADA ramp that we have in front of the old mission, when they were doing that and doing everything that they had to do, they had to do some footers. They had to go down. They found some of the clay pipe that had run from the filter house to the fountain in front of the mission. And by the way, the fountain in front of the mission is the oldest thing you can see here. It's from 1808. It survived earthquakes that the buildings didn't. So, but in that clay pipe coming from the filter house to the fountain, this is something else that they were just astounded at. It is glazed on the inside.
Mm.
And the pipes fit one into another so that it would be kept clean going underground from the filter house to the fountain. And it's a half a mile. It's okay. Amazing. And we have plans. We have all kinds of plans and drawings and things for that, which I guess would be considered a part of the architect, or that is part of the architectural patrimony too. Some that we've got the heritage.
Yeah. That I had no idea. You know, that's my favorite thing. There's the font in the church, of course, as you leave, and then I always augment that by going out and dipping my hand into that fountain. And I had no idea that was the oldest thing.
That is the oldest thing. If you look around on the side, there's actually a plaque saying it traces back to 1808. It was put in place in 1808.
And then the connection with the waterworks, and of course, you know, going up to even to the botanical garden, you can kind of see
right
above. Yeah,
that's
all
where
of the bastions, you know, how the water came through. Okay, so you probably have a million that you could quote me, that your most treasured book, your personally favorite of theology. What would you say?
We have, I, you're right. I mean, I couldn't tell you a favorite, but I'll tell you the oldest. The oldest that we have is from 1488. It was printed within 50 years of the Gutenberg printing press.
Mm.
It wasn't printed by Gutenberg, but printing had just come to Europe. And so 1488 by Nicholas of Lyra, who is a Franciscan commentator on scripture. So it's about, you know, it's and the portion of it that we have, we don't have the full commentary because it was multi-volume, but we have a volume which is about the first five books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch or the Torah. And the way it is done is printed on the page. In the very center of the page, you have maybe a 3-inch by 4-inch square that has the text. Then surrounding it, and again, this is a book that's like 14 inches by 12 inches or something. Surrounding that is the commentary all around it. So it surrounds the commentary. You read through the text and you look over to the side and there's the commentary. And it's part of that Franciscan tradition of the study of scriptures and trying to make the scriptures relevant and trying to open them up for people to understand what had been happening, so we can see how that connects with what is happening today. And I've got to put a plug in here. On June 24th, we are having at here, we're sponsoring here, the Archive Library is, our local bishop, Slavomir Shredka, who is the regional bishop, Catholic bishop of the Santa Barbara region. And prior to being ordained a bishop, he was a professor of scripture at the seminary in Camarillo. So he is coming, and in a joint thing with St. Barbara Parish, he is going to talk about scripture as the font of theology, scripture as the source. And he's inspired by, I mean, he was inspired to do the talk by our copy of Nicholas of Lyra. And so that's going to be, you know, that bringing that together. So it's 6 to 8 p.m., Tuesday, June 24th. If you want to mark the date, we got the.
I just did. How fascinating. It reminds me that, you know, the way you're talking about the formulaic, you know, here's the scripture and then the commentary. I'm thinking of, studying some of the Jewish, you know, right. The Midrash, for
Talmudic,
example.
Talmudic and Midrash.
Yes. Yeah. That sort of the setup where it's question and answer in a very didactic style. I guess, Father, I'm showing my ignorance, but the Franciscan tradition, this is the book you're talking about, 1488, that you have at the Mission Archive Library. So what's the oldest text in Franciscan theology?
Well, we have, I mean, we go back to Francis of Assisi himself. And we have, this is one of those fascinating things, is that Francis of Assisi never considered himself a scholar. And actually, not many people would think of him as a scholar. He was not a scholar. He was a layman who was ordained deacon. He was ordained a deacon, but he was not a priest. He was not a bishop. He was not that kind of studies. But we have from his writings, that you can see, you know, we have more. This is, don't tell the Dominicans I said this. We have more of the things that he wrote than the Dominicans have of the things that St. Dominic wrote.
Who was a scholar,
who was absolutely a scholar, and whose community still are among the great, great teachers of the church. But in any case, we have all of this because people treasured the things that Francis had to say. And one of the things that he wrote is a commentary on the Our Father. I mean, it's only about four pages, but it's a commentary. He goes verse by verse through the Our Father, you know, that central prayer to all Christians, and expands on it, speaks to it. So that's from the 1200s. It's one of his undated writings, but it's before 12. I mean, he died in 1226, so it's before 1226. And we also have, we don't have an original of that. Thank you. No, we've got copies of it, lots of copies of it from way back when.
That's theology, you know, that is amazing. Nicholas O'Dara, and it's the
Lyra, L-Y-R-R-A.
L-Y-R-R-A,
Nicholas of Lyra.
Okay. And that is 1488, and it's a commentary.
And now he wrote earlier than that, actually. That's the edition we have.
I see. Okay, so it's a commentary on the Pentateuch, and it's the five books of the Old Testament that lives here in Santa Barbara.
Yep.
Now, the most fascinating, I think, would be some of your brothers, Franciscan brothers, the archives that are treasured up at the Archive Library. Can you tell me about one or maybe more?
Do I have to pick one?
No, pick as many as you like. I mean, it's almost like a book of life almost up there.
It is.
Yeah.
One of the things that I need to speak to as well is that the archive library is one of two archives here at the Old Mission. And when you visited Brother Timothy Arthur, who was the provincial archivist, he was of the archivist of the province of St. Barbara, which was founded in 1915. So like when you visited him up on the top floor, we're the middle floor in the basement. He was the top floor. And when you visited him, you were seeing material that was primarily from 1915 forward. Though he got collected things too from earlier, but primarily from 1915 forward. In the archive library, we more or less are kept to 1769 and the things that the friars brought with them, you know, during the mission period, up through the mission period, which we count as basically 1854, because that's when we got a different governance structure for the Franciscans here in California. It became what's called an apostolic college. And the Apostolic College of Our Lady of Sorrows, which founded Our Lady of Sorrows Parish here in Santa Barbara. But then we actually left that and we're back at the Old Mission. But that Apostolic College era is from 1854 until 1885. So that 30-year period, that's kind of a bridge between the missions and the modern. We do the Apostolic College. We've got all kinds of material from the Apostolic College too. And that's where one of my favorite friars comes from that period. And that is Jose Maria de Jesus Gonzalez Rubio. And he was here in Santa Barbara from 1842 until his death in 1872. And until very shortly before he died in 1872, he was head of the house for most of that, for that 30 years. And so he's the one, I think I may be repeating myself, but he is the one who made sure that the material that came from the other missions didn't get lost. But he was also so beloved. There's a street, the street that runs beside the Rose Garden across the street from the mission, that's Gonzalez Rubio Street. I don't know if you know, the city named it for him at some point. So anyway, he's one of the ones that, you know, I enormously admire. And then there are others, there are records of many missionaries through the mission era, one of whom is Fermin Lasuen. Lasuen is the actual founder of the mission here in Santa Barbara. You know, Junipero Serra, and we've got an enormous amount of material on Junipero Serra, but Junipero Serra founded the first 9 missions. He wanted to found a mission here in Santa Barbara. So he came here in 1782, which you'll look on all the civic things, that's considered the birth year of Santa Barbara, because that's when the Presidio was founded downtown. And Junipero Serra was here for the founding of the Presidio. And he thought that he was founding his 10th mission along with the 4th Presidio. Santa Barbara is the 4th and last of the Presidios, the forts. But after he had blessed the ground where the Presidio was going to have a chapel and so on, after he had done that, the governor tells him, oh no, no mission yet, only a Presidio until we get the mission going. Well, one of the things we have is the Book of the Dead, the Book of the Burial Records. And Junipero Serra had written a full page introduction of this is the book we're going to keep the records of those who die here in Santa Barbara, because they always, you know, they kept records of birth, of marriage, and death. They were very particular to keep those three records of hatch, match, and dispatch, you know, birth, marriage, and death. So anyway, he wrote this book, and at the very first line, he said, this is the book for the mission and the presidio. Well, when he was told that it was not going to be a mission yet, you go back and you can see where he scratched out mission with a quill pen. I mean, you can just, and because he wasn't going to rewrite the whole thing. It also shows a little bit, I think he was a little upset. So he did not get to found the mission at Santa Barbara. Instead, he goes back to Monterey. He dies in 1784. And in 1786, his successor, Fermin Lasuen, founds the mission here at Santa Barbara. So Lasuen is another one of my heroes that is here.
So, Father, this is a dumb question. You'll say, well, I just don't know. You know, at church, in the center, right before you hit the altar, there's a stone with, I don't know, maybe 10 friars.
The entrance to the crypt.
The crypt, yes. Okay.
That's what it is. It's the entrance to the crypt.
So let me ask you, those, I sometimes, you know, because I sit up front and sometimes I look at that and I think, oh, he was this old and he was that old and he was this old when he was dispatched, as you say. Do you have any of the records of those brothers or fathers? You do?
We do have records of, we have records of almost all, because they were missionaries here. They were among the missionaries. The last one, it's very, very interesting. The last name on that slab, it's a big metal, or not metal, what am I saying, granite or whatever it is. It's heavy, heavy stone slab. And if you'll notice, next time you are there, look and see the four keyholes. There's a keyhole at each corner, and there's a very special key, four special keys that are very, very thick. And they have a loop at the end of them. And then like you would go on a key ring, except then down the key, you turn it and that releases the device. But then the key ring at the other end of the key, you can slide a bar through them at each end. So there are two bars, and that's how they raise that stone with a winch.
I see.
Bar at each end of it, and then they can move it over. Then it's an 8-foot drop down to the crypt. So you have to put a ladder down. Then you walk through a narrow hallway that opens out into, well, think of a lollipop or something. I mean, you know, narrow and then opens out and rounded. And that rounded part of the crypt reaches almost to the altar. And it's like the hub of a wheel with spokes sticking out. And that's the actual graves, are the spokes sticking out from that center piece of the crypt. And Father Joe Schwab and I had the incredible, incredible privilege of, we celebrated Mass in the crypt in November of 2023. It only gets opened about every 10 or 15 years. And we open it to make sure that there's no water. That's the basic thing, is you want to make sure that it's still dry. And when we opened it in 2023, it was dry as a bone in the crypt. That was a bad joke. I don't know if anybody got it, but it was dry as a bone.
I got it. I was actually thinking, how could that be when there was all the water sources that were dug?
They kept it very, 200 years. They insulated it very, very well.
Now, do you have of the, I don't know, is there 8 or 10 I can't remember how many names are on the slab that are in the crypt. Holy Fathers, do you have any of their, I call them treasure boxes?
Oh, well, we have what we have for them. Yes, we would have their records. We would have what we have. Don't ask me any of their names because I don't off the top of my head remember
right.
their names. But we do have materials, I'm sure, about all of them. We have materials.
And so what's the future of the, I mean, do we say, oh, if you're listening to this, dear listener, and you would like very much to be part of the future of the archive library, do you do accept donations? Is it part of your structure?
Oh, do we accept? No.
Okay.
Well, the first thing is, remember again, that our mission is to preserve materials having to do with the mission era. So yeah. 1769, basically to 1850. We'll go that far. So 1769 to 1850. And the materials that we take, we don't take materials in general, but we take materials that have to do with the missions, with the Franciscans, and with their interactions with the other people who were here, whether that's their interactions with the Chumash or other native groups, or their interaction with the Spanish at the Presidio, or the Spanish who were founding the Pueblo of Santa Barbara at the time, building it around the mission. So we do that. But the other thing that we accept is our financial donations, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We get no money from the government. We get no money from the church. We are a freestanding financially entity here that was founded. We go back to the 1960s when the corporation was founded to preserve these things and to build. We're actually, the archive library is, you mentioned it early on, that it's the end of the building opposite the mission is the archive library. And it's a three-story building that Rosario Culetti and other civic-minded, wonderful people here in Santa Barbara raised the money to build that, to preserve, to make sure that these materials were preserved. And so it's been a 501c3 literary, educational, cultural corporation since then. But we get no money from the church. We get no money from the government. We have to sort of beg, borrow as we can. And I would encourage people, I would really, really encourage people to go to our website, which is, think of the initials for Santa Barbara Mission Archive Library, sbmal.org. So sbmal.org. And the website will tells you all about our holdings. It tells you all of, I mean, it, and this is actually, we have something like 500 people a year who do research at the archive library. Some of it for scholastic things, some of it for genealogy, because among the things we have are those baptismal records from the missions, from the 21 missions. So we have, we have genealogical materials. We do things in cooperation with the Santa Barbara County Genealogical Society. We try to work with others. We have an open house every first Saturday of the month from 9:30 to 12:30, an open house. Anybody can come, anybody can view a number of the things that we have and see and find out all about us. Then we have in-person researchers We do that on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays from 10 until 4 each day, because we have a very limited space for researchers. So we do that by appointment. We ask people to make an appointment rather than drop in, as it were.
Let me ask you, Father Jacob, telling you I'm an appraiser, and I have so many people that, you know, I do personal property appraisals, and they'll say, well, I've got these old books, you know, and I just need to see if anybody wants them. And, you know, your field of study at the Mission Archive is, you know, from the mission period. So we'll say 1769 to 1840, 1854. And so it's not just any old books where I'm thinking, right. Oh, well, I have a client right now who has pre-Civil War material, you know, and so would that be a candidate, for example? But no, what I'm understanding from you is
if it's not directly connected, because we have limited space. That's one of our big problems, is that we have limited space. And so we would love to see everything get a good home, but we are not, I mean, we're kind of like the old mother in the shoe. I mean, we have limited space for materials.
And what about material culture, for example? What about, you know, statuary and paintings?
We have about 300 pieces of art, all told, including one of those sets of art that we got to share was September. Two years ago, we have 21 paintings of one of each of the California missions that were painted in the 1890s by Edwin Deacon, who is a very significant artist. And he went to each one of the missions, sketched them, went back to his studio in San Francisco, and created three complete sets of paintings. One of the sets is watercolors, and they have that at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum. We have one of the two oil sets. The other is at the Los Angeles Museum of Natural History. We have one of the oil sets, and that's one of the things people will see if they come, because we've got that's in our public room, the room where we share things, the gallery, the Guarini Gallery. And anyway, we loaned our oil sets to the Historic Museum, and they did an exhibition for 4 months, 5 months, of fall of 24 to spring of 25 of the two sets together. So you could like compare what Deacon did in his paintings. But so we have something in the neighborhood of 300 pieces of art.
If I have a client, for example, or have had clients in the past as well, Father Jack, where they've got, one of the oil, not deacons, but one an early oil, for example, by some of our oldest artists in Santa Barbara, of some adobes, for example. So that was, you know, the romantic adobe kind of a thing. And so, you know, that would that kind of thing be of interest to the Mission Archive Library, or are you just more interested in the written word?
Well, no, we're interested, and we do accept on occasion. But if it's about Santa Barbara rather than about the mission, or if it's of something in Santa Barbara, unless it might be the Chumash Village that was right here with us, that would certainly be of great interest to us. But if it's Santa Barbara in general, like something near the Presidio or down, the Santa Barbara Historical Museum, I'd actually recommend would be the place, because they have a more general interest in Santa Barbara.
So your specific interest as regards material culture would be related to the mission itself.
Correct.
Or the interface of the mission with and not necessarily the flora and the fauna or the actual architecture or the people in Santa Barbara. It has to do with the mission. What about Franciscan material? So if a client has, for example, like Father Joe Thompson, you know, if he's got material like related to the De La Guerra family, and there's a relationship to a Franciscan brother, that sort of thing would
that would be of interest. And again, it might not be of interest to the archive library, but it might very well be of interest to the provincial archive.
I see.
It and might, if their, it's more recent, their, if it's more recent, you know, if it's since 1915.
And they're, and they are in, are they the same? Are they the same? Are they a 501c3 not-for-profit down
no,
there?
No, they're a unit. There. They're a unit of the province, which itself is a 501c3, but
okay.
Yeah, but it's a religious one rather than a cultural. Yeah.
I see. Okay. And then just before we go, as far as I was so afraid so many times where even my little house on East Pedregosa, you know, we were suggested to evacuate at least two times in the last three fires. Mm-hmm. And I always was like, okay, what's my beautiful mission going to do? And I wondered, the buildings are beautiful, but they're not new. And, you know, the kind of, I was one of the docents at the Getty when the Getty first opened in LA. And I remember the tours they gave and instructed us, the big metal doors that would come down and the infrastructure that Geary, you know, the architect built just for that reason, because California. And now, you know, Father Jack, I've had the misfortune of being expert witness in so many court cases involving many of my families that I've worked for over the years in Santa Barbara who have lost things to the fires. Mm-hmm. Now I work in the Palisades and in Altadena, those areas, because I've become kind of an expert on fire issues. And I wonder about my beautiful mission sometimes.
Two things. One, first is, you know, as I say, the Mission Archive Library, opposite end from the church itself, when it was built in the late 1960s, 1967, 68, when it was built, it was built to look on the outside exactly like the rest of the mission. But it's not. It is, instead of it being adobe, instead of it being stone, it is reinforced concrete. Mm. There are steel beams in the roofs and the floors. It was made as earthquake and fireproof as technology allowed in the 1960s, including we have a vault, you know, with our very most valuable stuff is in the vault that is, you know, it's steel and concrete and all that business. It's a room. I mean, you know, it's a vault room. So the precautions that could be taken are taken, and a whole lot of what we do is for the humidity and climate and temperature control. That's why we don't let people into where the things are actually kept. We bring them out to them in a research room, a reading room. You know, and because we're maintaining as best as possible the humidity and temperature and so on, and light. And I mean, there are no windows in any of that interior part of it. So it's meant to protect it. The church, we turn to God to protect.
Yes, and also where the brethren actually live. How about, I mean, that's a conversation for another time. I guess they'll all pile into the Mission Archive Library if something happens.
they come in when it gets hot because we're the only place with air conditioning.
Yeah, it's cool. Yep.
But
you know, I just want to say, first of all, thank you to Father Jack Clark Robinson, and I also want to just give another shout out. I'm a donor, and I encourage you, listener, to really, first of all, do take an open house tour one of these Saturdays. You'll just be amazed. And every time you pass the mission, you'll look up there and you'll say, oh, you'll be proud to know what's there. You'll be so proud to know what's there. And I urge you to check out the following SBMAL, Santa Barbara Mission Archive, SBMAL.org. The website is very, very informative. You can find a place to donate. But I would say if you just go to that website, and you don't have to do anything there, but actually subscribe, because every so often you'll get an email and you'll be allowed to see a multitude. For example, there's a lecture coming up that I want to go to that's talking about the food of the mission period versus the Chumash food of the era. And this is so fascinating. Where else are you going to get that kind of information?
And it's not going to be as much a lecture as it's going to be a tasting.
A tasting,
You're going to get to taste all of this different food.
Yes. And then as Father was saying, you know, we're going to hear the bishop on June 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. We're going to hear him talk about Nicholas Lyra, and I think, I hope I'm saying that right, and from his inspiration in 1488. And we're going to talk about the cornerstone of the Franciscan tradition and spiritual relevance in the scriptures. How else are you going to know about this unless you look and you subscribe and you hear? This is one of 5 to 6 lectures coming up in the near couple of months. This is, and not only lectures, but there's all kinds of interactive things. There's some guides as far as learning guides are concerned, how to research, how to get involved with genealogical research. All of this material is there. And you must also just put your name in there, your email, to find out about these things that are going on. There's a lecture I went to up there where two brethren were speaking, from one Dominican, one Franciscan, about their different walks of life. I would have never known. So these are important things to find out, and it's right in our backyard. All you have to do is go sbmal.org and just subscribe. Don't have to pay anything. Just subscribe and you'll get these wonderful emails, quite informative, informing you of all the lectures, all the events, all the tours, and how to research, how to visit. So Father Jack, I appreciate you coming on so much. Well, and
thank you, Elizabeth, for inviting me. Thank you very much.
I just can't thank you enough for your curatorship, your guidance, and your good humor at Mass. It's always it's always great to hear you speak. Anyway, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate it, Father Jack.
Most welcome.
Okay, bye. Thank you. Bye.